Second hour, Thursday edition, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. We are broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. I'm Joe Rex Road, Jay Kleiman in for Robbie, Ian Safar producing, and I think we need to give away tickets. Let's give away tickets. Let's give away tickets, Ian.
Let's do it.
Ghost, Bridgestone Arena, Saturday, 2 days from now. Caller... Five. Color five.
Okay.
No idea why, but let's go color five. And let's get back into the Tennessee Titans. So a couple things. One, they did make a move, and they need to do anything they can do at edge. They have a real problem at edge, as we've talked about many times. They have signed Jihad Ward, who – had all of one sack last year.
One more than Lorenzo Carter, though.
That is right. One more than Lorenzo Carter. He has had some pressures. He's had some production in his career. He is not ancient. How old is Jihad Ward?
Jihad, 29?
This
does
is
that sound right?
Information that I should have had available. But my computer is just restarting right now.
He is 31.
Yeah. So... you add him, which, you know, I think is of the available options. You know, there are bigger names out there, but I think older guys and anything, you know, I also think in some cases just guys that you weren't going to get anyway. So there's that. And then also, you know, hearing him talk and just the general kind of storyline around Femi Oladejo. The rookie, you know, the project, the guy who just recently moved from inside to outside. I think that, you know, you don't want to go overboard because this is what happens in camp. It's someone's flying around making plays, and then the season they have three sacks, you know. So, I definitely want to be careful there. But I will – our friend Nick Suss, who, of course, was on the show yesterday – he's got his observations. Everybody's got observations and this and that from – this is an interesting little segment that Nick wrote in the Tennessean. He said, rookie of the day was Oladejo. He said, quote, Oladejo took a higher percentage of significant reps to start training camp than he took during OTAs and minicamp at both 11-on-11 and 7-on-7. His past life as a college inside linebacker came in handy reacting to pass plays where he batted one pass at the line of scrimmage and matched up with receivers and tight ends. And then, you know, coming off Carter's announcement, he also got some looks coming after the quarterback. Well, I think there's definitely something there with this guy. What that means, I mean, you need something serious to be there with that guy, like by next year, considering where you took him. But I do think he's one of those, key players that we're going to look back and we're going to say, wow, this is why things worked out for this particular front office. I'm not saying him, obviously Cam Ward starts that list, but he is one of those key guys where you use a high pick and we know how things have gone in the draft for the Titans. And early on, I think there are some encouraging signs. You have to be very careful, but encouraging.
Agreed. You have to be measured. You can't, after one practice, say, oh, this guy's going to have 12 sacks as a rookie and be defensive rookie of the year. Like, I think that's probably too much. Again, this guy just started playing outside linebacker within the last year. So there's a lot of growth that has to happen there, but it is encouraging that as early in his career that he is flashing. I kind of always thought that this year, redshirt's probably not the right word because he is going to play, but I kind of thought that this year was going to be a development year for him where he plays a little bit. Maybe you see the flashes, he gets three or four sacks and you hope that he takes a big leap into year two. But if he's already making plays out there, maybe there is a chance that instead of being kind of a reserve guy where he's not on the field all the time and you bring him in, give him some reps, maybe he is a guy who's going to play 70% of the snaps for you if he is taking the steps that you need him to in year one.
The guy's going to, you know, it's not necessarily ideal to be a quote-unquote project and then have Arden Key as like the, you know, like, and again, Arden Key's fine, but like, if that's what you want to be, you know, you frankly, So another reason that, like, if I were the Titans, I'd want Harold Landry around, because I think he always, in his entire time here, set a tone of this is the level of work and all these things. He was a pro. But opportunity, is there. Opportunity is there, like, very few teams, maybe no other teams, for a young edge like this who has a lot of work to do, but, like, is just still the best option.
Right. He could easily end up being the best edge rusher on this team. It's a very low bar. I mean, Draymond Jones, you hope, is going to be a solid piece out there. And then Arden Key, we kind of know what he is at this point. He'll have a game or two where he gets two sacks and makes an impact on the game, and then he'll have a month where he disappears. So the opportunity is there for Femi Oladejo. I do agree with you. I kind of would have wanted Harold Landry around. Like, Nick Suss saying that Femi's dropping into coverage too and covering tight. Like, Harold Landry used to do that too. He was kind of that kind of player where, yeah, his main thing was he would get you 9 to 12 sacks every year, but he also could drop out and make a play if you needed him to. So
yeah, he was an every down player, which
right,
is very valuable.
I would have liked him around to, mentor a young guy who's kind of just growing into his role. But at least at this point, if Femi is solid, he's going to get all the reps, and that's going to be important for him moving forward.
Yeah, the Titans have embraced the suck. I'm into the text line. Good news. Thank you, Chase. Thank you, Chase, for getting me into the text line.
Just in time to see Skylar's
immediately
text.
Greeted by Skylar. Arden Key farting sucks. Don't sugarcoat it, Joe. I'm not sugarcoating it. He's okay.
Arden Key is a capable NFL player, nothing more.
Yeah, like Arden Key. There are other teams besides this team. If Arden Key was your third guy, that's not bad.
Arden Key's
a decent third guy in the NFL.
He would make almost every NFL
guy.
Roster.
Yeah, sure. Like, yeah. No, I think he'd. Yeah.
He'd probably make every roster.
I think he'd be on any active roster in the league. But ideally, yeah, he's your third guy situational.
Right.
And with the Titans, he's much more than that. And JD says, or maybe the Titans' O-line just sucks, which is much more like it. There's a lot of suck going on today. A lot of suck already that I'm reading on the text line. People are not excited or optimistic. But
yeah,
I understand.
Let's not make any sweeping generalizations on the offensive line until they put the pads on, like good or bad, because we've seen before where we get tweets of like, oh, the offensive line looks good. And it's like, all right, well, they haven't even put the pads on yet. Let's see. And then they get smoked on day one when the pads come on. So either way, let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah. Jared on the YouTube chat says, I'd love to see them go get Za'Darius Smith. I think this signing this is going to be the signing. And I never, like Big Z and some of these guys who it seems like every year it's just like, okay, try to see how much I can get here, maybe a little ring chasing there. I think a lot of these guys would not be interested in coming here anyway, but I think signing Jihad Ward probably takes care of that.
Yeah.
Again, they don't have what you need, but like signing another veteran like that doesn't make sense.
You're not a pass rusher away.
Yeah.
From
you need
being
a,
competitive.
Yeah, and you need a Jalen Harrell, an Allie Gay, somebody to, that would be a big deal for in camp, one of those guys to show something. Not necessarily going to get it, but I think you have to give some reps to young guys, and young and cheap is, you're not, I know some people are like, hey, what about Trey Hendrickson? Yeah, it just doesn't make sense right now with your timeline. You're going to invest that. You're going to look at a guy like that, given what your timeline is right now. They made it clear, like, this year is not any sort of go-for-it year. So, signing someone to, like, help your young quarterback, that makes sense. So, if another receiver or something like that. But I think this is pretty much what they're going to be, guys,
Yeah, this is –
there's going to be some churn, as they said, about on the roster, but this is basically what they're going to be. Not very good.
It's not 2020 where – that team, after going to the AFC Championship, and the one thing you couldn't do was affect the quarterback, so they went out and got Jadeveon Clowney. Like, that made sense to go get a pass rusher where you felt like that could be the missing piece for you to make a run. This year, you bring in Za'Darius Smith. Does that even add a win to your total? Probably not. Like, maybe it makes your defense a little bit better on the outside, but it's not going to really change the outlook of this team, at least notably in any way.
Big Z has seen better days. But we do have Austin saying, I'm staying optimistic. The O-line will be better than most people think. There you go. Little sunshine. And Texter says, unnamed Texter, excited for the season. Whether we only win three games or win the division, it's a season that will point us in the direction that we'll be heading towards. That is true. This season will point you in some direction.
Very insightful.
What direction? I don't know. But it is a football season. They will be playing football. You are right. I like that sort of optimism, kind of. Whatever, yeah, you know, que sera, sera on this. When we come back, I got to get into, there's some troubling stuff going on with the Tennessee Vols football team. Key guy up in the air right now. We're going to get into that next. Robbie and Rex showed 102.5, 106.3 the game. Hey, folks, tune in to ESPN 94.9 The Fan today as the Nashville Sounds take on Charlotte at First Horizon Park. Pregame begins at 6:20 p.m., first pitch 6:35. Coverage also available on the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball on ESPN 94.9 The Fan, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Also, the Borchetta Bourbon Music City Grand Prix is coming to the Nashville Super Speedway Labor Day weekend. 102.5 The Game has your chance to win VIP tickets to the IndyCar race. Text in the keyword RACE, R-A-C-E, now. 615-737-1025. That's the text line driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com to be entered to win a pair of VIP tickets. For more information on the event, visit MusicCityGP.com. Welcome back into Robbie and Rex Road. Taking a little college football break here because, yeah, the Boo Carter stuff at Tennessee has been, it's been out there a lot on the interwebs, Jake, and I don't know how closely, you know, pay attention to the Vols related interwebs, but there's been a lot of talk, a lot of conjecture, some stuff that's not even worth repeating. He's got his mom going on social media and getting after people, but the bottom line is there are questions about Boo Carter and the Vols this year, and that is a big problem for Tennessee if they don't have Boo Carter.
I don't keep up a ton with what's going on over there, but I have seen that, you know, he's missing football practices, meetings, all this stuff, and, you know, the team's kind of getting fed up with it. I don't know if two instances like this with Nico and now you're having issues with Boo Carter means it's a program problem or a hypo problem, but it is interesting that, you know, two times within the last 3 months, 4 months, you've had some of your better players basically just quit on the team. And we don't know. Maybe Boo Carter will be back and figure this out. But it is very interesting that the Vols are having this many problems in this offseason with just a month to go until they get underway against Syracuse.
Yeah, Adam Sparks, friend of the show, wrote a story in the Knoxville News Sentinel, and to quote him, quote, Knox News has learned that Carter missed numerous team activities and he was confronted by team leaders because of his absence, end quote. UT declined comment. The first time, so media day for the Vols is coming up, I guess that would be Tuesday. Media day is Tuesday. Practice begins Wednesday. So, you know, at that point, obviously, I mean, there may be a resolution and maybe it'll be like, okay, everything's fine and he's back and his Sparks also reached out to his representatives. They did not respond, so they're not talking right now. But it's just, you know, it's an interesting thing you bring up there. I mean, the Nico thing, I think Josh Heupel got a lot of grace, and frankly, I think he deserves it.
Because, I agree.
Because, look, and I've talked to people on the Tennessee staff when they recruited Nico, who were concerned at that point about his dad. And at that point saying, great talent and all that, but this is the quarterback dad thing is a real thing. And the quarterback dad thing can be a real problem. And, I mean, again, some coaches, I've talked to coaches who have said, like, that is like when we go through the list of these guys and comparing them, we absolutely dad's on there. Is the dad, like, just out of control? So I think Heupel gets grace on that. I think it's really rough for Tennessee fans to think about, and this is somewhat a sign of the times of college football, but to think about Nico leaving, now possibly, you know, you're arguably your most talented defensive player who also could be a really key part of the offense. I don't know if I spy that he's a key part, but a guy that is so talented. He's a punt returner and a guy that they want to get the ball in his hands, and he's an electric athlete. It's one of those guys that when you play these top teams, he's one of those guys who equalizes a talent level for you when you play these top teams. So to think about him possibly bailing after, you know, Ricky Gibson and Mike Matthews almost, you know, they were, again, this happens. This is a sign of the times. You know, as Sparks points out, then you also had all the stuff with James Pierce and, you know, what was going on with him last year, and it obviously got into the draft process. And so, look, I don't think it's unfair to say, is there a program issue? I don't know that I buy that there is, but I don't think it's an unfair question to bring up.
Yeah, I think a couple of times could be a coincidence, but you're right. We have seen there's been multiple times, and you make the good point that it is a sign of the times. It's not like this isn't happening other places. You have to recruit your own roster basically every single year.
Exactly.
And sometimes there's going to be guys that get unhappy and they leave, but the timing of all of it is just strange. Like, it's so rare to lose your quarterback in spring practice. And I know there were his dad and, you know, you don't expect your quarterback to renegotiate his NIL deal in spring practice. But there's been multiple times the last couple of years where you've had these issues pop up. If they lose Boo Carter too, not that I think Tennessee is a national championship contender this year, but you wonder if they slip even further towards it from maybe a middle of the pack SEC team to back down towards 10, 11, 12, somewhere in that range.
Yeah, look, I mean, he's a defensive back, but I mean, he could potentially touch all three aspects of the football team this year. I mean, I think that could be worth a loss, another loss on the on the schedule if you lose him. So, you know, Jacob in the text line says coach/program issue possibly. It's also a dramatic recruiting issue, recruiting the wrong type of guy. I've seen some of this on Vol Twitter and sort of like making the comparison between like Nico and Boo Carter. Again, when you say the wrong type of guy, I mean, look, again, there's stuff out here about Boo Carter. I'm not even going to entertain it because there's just no – it's none of it's like terrible, but it's like I'm not even going to entertain it, you know. But when you say wrong type of guy, I mean, what told you that he was the, quote, wrong type of guy? Again, if we're talking about, you know, getting paid, these teams are all trying to poach each other's players. And so, like, again, when guys like Matthew, guys going to the portal, it's just, I mean, they have agents, and it's like, yeah, if you're going to have yearly free agency, that's going to happen. And also, like, again, Nico, I don't think is the wrong type of guy. I think they overplayed their hand. I think his dad is a boob, frankly, and I think his dad screwed him up. I mean, I think that's the problem. With the Boo Carter thing, again, I don't know, obviously, all the details here, but I don't know that I'm on board with the whole recruit. Like, you're trying to recruit some of the most talented football players in the country. Boo Carter is one of those guys. And there were no massive red flags that I know of when he was a recruit.
Yeah, I don't agree with that. You recruit the best players, and obviously you want good character guys in that room, but every single program has guys who get into trouble or they ask for more money. I mean, not to bring it, like Georgia. Georgia has problems like this all the time, and it isn't made into as big of a deal. Like, I think Tennessee, it's been a bad offseason for the Vols, but I think to say a wide sweeping generalization that they're recruiting the wrong type of guys is probably a little premature.
And to your point, you know, Georgia football commit Chase Calicut has just been charged in a Texas drive-by shooting. He's a co-defendant. And they've obviously had a lot of things. Look, I mean, you know, the Georgia stuff. I mean, Caleb's like, would you rather have, you know, this issue or Georgia? I mean, you want these problems with Georgia's, LOL. I'm like, well, again, you have 100 people on your roster. You are going to have situations. The Georgia thing, especially the whole Georgia, like, driving thing is bizarre.
It's so strange.
But, I mean, you're also, like, you have to allow for some of this. Texas says, Boo attended 4 high schools in 4 years, not a surprise. Yeah, well, that happens too, you know. But, again, are you saying that Josh Heupel and that staff should not have recruited him? I mean, even as a freshman, he made a difference. It's just, I mean, I'm trending toward talent. And yeah, of course the off the field things matter, but what is this situation right now? You know, is it, I don't know exactly what it is. So I think people are jumping to conclusions. But by the way, we've just left Adam in Portland on hold forever. So we need to get Adam in here. Adam, what's up?
Well, you were complaining about Landry and you were like, oh, Landry. Dude, I don't hate Landry, man. But at the same time, I wasn't sad to see Landry go. Like, I think that's the problem I have, Joe, with the Titans right now is that it's like, I guess apathy, maybe we're even past apathy, where I'm like, we could have cut 45 players and I would have been totally cool with it. I'm paying a lot of money, right, for the tickets. You pay a lot of money to move in the new stadium. Dude, like, I feel like my investment is not very good right now, but also I'm trying to look at it long term, and you were the worst team in the league. Jacksonville swept you. Like, that's where I'm stuck at right now, dude, is like, I get it. Landry would give you the occasional 8-10 sacks, something like that. But he wasn't somebody that – I'm not going to go buy his jersey. Like, he's not somebody who, you know, I got sad when they cut him. So, I don't know. I'm in a weird spot with the Titans right now, dude. Our relationship is rocky. I wish it was better. But at the same time, like, I'm not giving up hope, but it's just weird right now.
Thank you, Adam. Yeah, I agree. Like, Landry's – and like, it's absolutely given the number for him. Like, I get it. I'm just saying, like – you look at a particular situation like Oladejo, he would have been a good guy to have here. You
right.
know?
It would have been
that's
nice
not,
to have
You
him.
Don't make your entire decision on somebody like that, making the money he makes based on that. But I'm just saying there is a bit of a void here.
Well, and you
with
have
guys. And maybe Jihad Ward is a guy, even though he's not a star or anything like that, maybe he brings some of that.
Yeah, and you obviously didn't know you were going to draft Femi Oladejo when you made the decision on Harold Landry. So you couldn't have done that, but it would have been nice to have him in the room.
We got some more reaction on Vols and that whole situation and Georgia and all those things. We will get to some of that later. I need a segment to continue to attack the Big Ten, so I'm going to bring in a scribe for the Big Ten next, and we're going to get into just how ridiculous Tony Petitti is and what the proper playoff format should be. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex are 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Jay Kleiman in for Robbie, Ian Safar producing. Very excited to bring in our next guest. It's actually kind of bad that I've never had my buddy Graham Couch on the show before. Graham Couch, Lansing State Journal sports columnist, one of the best columnists in the country, I would say, although some of his takes are very scorching hot. I think actually the first time I ever heard the term hot take might have been someone on the Michigan State beat talking about Graham. But it's really a big oversight that we haven't had him on. And Graham, with today, first of all, how the heck are you?
I'm great now. I mean, it's been something that's hurt me over the years, not being on the show. I've thought about a lot.
You desperately wanted to be on in Nashville.
This is the beginning of healing today. Yeah.
All right, well, good, because we're gonna figure out the college football playoff. But first of all, I mean, Tony Petitti, man. I mean, like, I don't want to overreact, okay? But, like, the guy is, like, a TV exec and the MLB Network. Like, why the hell is he the Big Ten commissioner? Let's start there. Why the hell is he the Big Ten commissioner?
It's a great point. I'm all about out of the box hires, and I don't think you have to come up the way, you know, through an athletic director's office to be a commissioner or anything like that, or through an NFL team. But I think it's almost like they got too cute with this one. They thought the, you know, symbiotic nature of that relationship with television and how important that was going to be everything. The problem is there's a lot more to the job. And the other thing is, you know, a lot of it's decisions and ideas and you know, as you pointed out here, I mean, this is a one really bad idea. And the problem I have with some of his ideas and this one is when you have bad ideas, it's a red flag for other bad ideas. There are certain things right. Just sort of, you know, mean your opinions on things are concerning.
Yeah, well, and of course, the bad idea, people who are listening have probably heard me rail about it. I mean, I've railed many times about this 4-4-2-2-1 format, which just offends me in, like, at every turn. But, you know, I'm also, you know, I understand that you're going to put up a united front to some extent. But honestly, Graham, here at Big Ten Media Days, which apparently, like, nobody is out covering. I saw James Franklin's like, I wish we had any reporters here. But like all the coaches are you know, signing up for this, speaking out in support of this. Ryan Day is talking about you know, maybe they don't schedule tough games if they don't get their way, which is absolutely idiotic because that's when you do schedule tough games if it's not this system. I mean, I don't mean to be like the SEC guy just completely trashing the Big Ten, Graham, but like, what is happening here?
Yeah, it's frustrating for me because I'm usually a Big Ten guy who trashes the SEC.
Exactly. And usually you've got great stuff.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about that, but yeah, so it's hard for me to, I have to sort of bash myself and my own brethren here. But what's problematic is, like, the whole point of college football in a lot of ways is great rivalries, great matchups, great Saturday afternoons, right? That's what the sport is. It's the experience of Saturday afternoons. And when teams don't want to play, when they aren't encouraged to play, when they don't think it's important to play, it's one thing to dodge good games and play a weak schedule. It's another thing to sort of brag about it as this being the system, because it's you're not creating the best experience for your own fans. And I think at the core of any system that's created for a college football playoff ought to be something that encourages good matchups, interesting matchups, games you wouldn't get to see otherwise. I mean, I think, I cover Michigan State, and you were still around for covering MSU when they played Oregon in 2015, before Oregon was actually in the Big Ten, in Spartan Stadium for, one of the better Saturday nights you'll ever be around in college football. Yeah, I mean, you don't want teams to look away for those matchups. And they won that game, and that actually helped them get in the playoff when they had a dumb loss later in the year. And so that stuff can help you, but it also, you don't want to ever get to the point that you're not encouraging that. I don't hate the idea of auto bids as much as some people do, but what you pointed out in your column, and I think the most important thing, is this has to be about competition, so it has to be about fairness. And if you're going to have a legitimate champion, you can't have four teams automatically from two leagues and two teams automatically from other power leagues in certain years could actually be better than the other leagues. I mean, that just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. If you wanted to get to a place where you were three auto bids from every power league or four from every, well, how many, do whatever you want, but it has to be uniformed in terms of auto bids.
Yeah. No, absolutely. I mean, that's, and this is where I think it seems to me, Graham, that Petitti, like, he really like the part about this that excites him the most is what it seems to me is like this play-in game weekend. And again, that's where I get into the MLB network guy who comes into college sports and he's sitting there talking to everybody, well, another professional sports, blah, blah, blah. I don't care, man. This is not that. This is college football. You cannot make those comparisons. And I've heard some people push back and say, why wouldn't it be fun? You would have more teams late who would be alive, and then you have these win and end games, and that particular Saturday would be exciting. I think it would be horrifically gimmicky, and I would hate it. But I don't know. Like, do you see any redeeming value in that?
I do see the idea of having auto bids within a league. I mean, it's very English football, European football, like, right? Or if you knew,
which you love,
which I love, right? And so, and over there, to get into European places for like the Champions League and Europa League, you have that, and it creates beyond winning the league. It creates a second bit of drama, right? That's great late in the year, and at the bottom you have relegation. And like in the Big Ten, for example, in basketball now, because there are 37 million teams in the league, you can't have everybody go to the Big Ten basketball tournament. So the bottom three teams don't get in. And that did create, especially because the bottom of the league wasn't actually horrible last year, it did create drama where teams that were like, 7-10 going into the final game were still playing for something. And so I like that. And I don't hate the idea that there is something, you're the sixth place team, but you still got a chance to get to four and get in and you're playing for something late. The extra game though, the idea of playing games, it's just harder to do in football than I think he realizes. It kind of speaks to a lack of experience with the sport in terms of, being around it and truly understanding what people need. You certainly have to, But the biggest thing to me is just it's the arrogance and the idea. I mean, it really bothers me the idea that you assume that you're better than the ACC or Big 12.
Oh, totally.
And then the other issue with that is in a year where you're not, and somebody there who's really deserving gets left out, then you don't really have a national champion. That's the thing. I would just phrase it like that to those people. Because, like, I think one of the great things about the 12-team playoff, which I think 12 is fine, but if you're going to go to 14, 16, whatever, is that you do have, you know, whatever you think of who gets left out of the back end, the team that emerges from that is you know, legitimately going to be a champion. And but if you're going to, if you're going to predetermine the field, that's just not how this works.
You're going to have a year where it's a disaster because you did that. And then everyone, NFC, that's right. That's guaranteed.
The NFC North was great last year at the top, right? Vikings, Lions, Packers, all that stuff. You can't predetermine in the NFL playoffs. Well, look at the NFC North. Okay. You know, they should automatically get two in for sure. You know, like that's just not how we do things in sports. And it's a real, I mean, it's really brazen to sit up there and sort of insist that's how it should be. And I especially with the number of bad, the number of bad Big Ten West teams over the years that have played for Big Ten championships, and I understand the divisions are gone now, but like there are a lot of years the Big Ten has not been any stronger than the Big 12. And so the idea that it would assure that it always, or think that it always would be, or think that it deserves more than those leagues is ridiculous.
Talking with Graham Couch here on Robbie and Rex Road. Graham, I thought it was funny with Kurt Cignetti this week saying basically that because other teams don't schedule hard, that he is going to cancel the series with noted college football powerhouse Virginia. Do you think in order to get a compromise on this 16-team playoff that the SEC may have to go to 9 conference games? Because it just feels like the Big Ten is going to laud that over their heads at this point, that they play 9, the SEC plays 8, and the SEC just schedules too many cupcakes.
Yeah, I don't know if they have to, but they should. I mean, it's not quite as brazen as what Petitti's doing. But the idea that the SEC is always stronger than other leagues, so it only needs to therefore play 8, is also ridiculous, too, because it's not. I mean, the SEC has benefited for years from, the high preseason rankings. You get 2 SEC teams. You get, like, Texas A&M playing South Carolina in week 1. They're both pretty highly ranked. 1 wins. Turns out they both stink, but nobody knows that for 8 weeks because they're ranked number 4 and number 6. And so there's this perception that's created. The SEC has benefited from that for years. Now, the SEC overall, over the last several decades, has been the best conference. I'm not disputing that. But it also speaks to the idea that you're always best, so you only need to play 8, right? What I think needs to happen is you create some sort of uniform standards, because I hate Indiana's schedule. I mean, if I was on the committee, I would be in that room arguing anybody who played 8 home games, and quite a few have recently. I think Michigan did the year they won a national title. Ohio State did the other year. Indiana did last year. Would not get in the playoff. I mean, you think about 8 home games. I mean, 7-5, we get the financial structure of the sport. If people accept it, it's good. But if in the NFL, some teams played 11 home games and others played 6, like, nobody would stand for that, right? The idea of 8 home games is nuts. You should have to play 5 true road games. And if you did something like where you can play as many conference games as you want, but everybody in the Power 4 that's going to get an auto bid or is, you know, playoff eligible or it's really frowned upon if needs to play 10 other Power 4 or 10 Power 4 teams on their schedule, you can do whatever you want. Then the conference thing wouldn't matter. So then if you're going to play 8, then you got to play 2 in the non-conference. If you're going to play 9, you're going to play one of your 3 that's some sort. And that would also incentivize cool matchups, I just think the thing that I'd really like to see is, however we get there, teams rewarded for good scheduling and intent in scheduling, and teams punished for not. I think intent in scheduling matters. I think what Indiana is doing is a crock. I think if you plan to, if you put Notre Dame on your schedule and it happens to be a year they're 4-8, you should be punished less for that than, you know, if you didn't even try to put that game on schedule.
No, I totally agree, and I'm glad you were able to get in a little rip on the SEC. All right, last thing, real fast, Graham. So, and you're not wrong. I agree. I love the idea. Like, let's have 10 games against power teams, and everybody do that. However that looks, let's do 10. And I agree that absolutely the committee needs to look at intent, and that needs to matter. And you mentioned Michigan State in 2015. I think that helped them. They had Oregon, and even though they lost that Nebraska game. All right, real fast. So did you tell me you had a 20 game? You got a 20 game you want to do? Is that, or not 20 game, 20 team playoff?
Well, I don't want to do a 20 team playoff, but to me, if you were going to do 4 automatic bids, you'd have to get to 20. Like, to me, because the other.
I get what you're saying. Okay. Yeah.
You can't leave out the little guy. Yeah. That would drive me nuts. I mean, you got to give an opportunity for everybody. You got to have a way to get yourself in if you're Boise, if you're whoever. You know, that dream has to be alive. And it's good. One of the things the big guys don't understand, I think, and this is in college basketball too right now, is if you kill the dream for the little guy, in basketball, I think this is more important, where you've got almost 300 schools who aren't the big guy. If you kill the dream for those fan bases and they disengage over time, those eyeballs on all the games, those TV contracts that the SEC and Big Ten enjoy right now, eventually they'll go down. It'll take, you know, maybe a generation. College football is really popular. College basketball is popular enough. But, like, you cannot turn off your fan base. And you have to, you know, part of the reason that fans of Miami, Ohio tune in is not just because they love a sport, but it's because there is this dream that, you know, that things could go perfectly one year and they could be part of this. And so, I'm a big believer in that. But, yeah, no, I think the only reason I would say 20 is it, I would – 20 seems a bit much, but if you want 4 auto bids, then that's okay, but the ACC has to have 4 auto bids, the Big 12 has to have 4 auto bids, and you've got 16 auto bids, and then you got to have a 20-team playoff. But if you want to do that, do it. Just everybody's got to have the same amount at the Power 4 level.
Yeah, that makes sense. Graham, thanks so much, buddy. It was great talking to you. I'll catch up with you when I'm moving in boys to college in a few weeks, but we'll have you on again to keep fixing college sports.
I look forward to it. Thanks for having me.
Graham Couch, Lansing State Journal. And when we come back, time for the Rex Rant. 102.5, 106.3 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant. Now on Robbie and Rex Road.
I'm going to make my voice go like this.
I'll get 2 venti. I go to, you know, Starbucks. I get 2 venti.
And you got your hat on backwards?
You can act like a man. Yeah, oh, man, you know, I tell you what, man, you do that. I love you guys so much, man.
With 2 shots in them, so black eye in both. That's what I come in with. That's how I start the day, so.
Heartburn is like gout. It's mental.
Coach Harbaugh came out of the bathroom, and I said, Coach, I would be honored to pour some liquid soap into your hand.
Now if my zipper's up, I feel like I'm in, I'm in style.
Did you think Nick Saban would ever wear a backwards cap and give a rah-rah speech to the team?
Oh, what a collage of
well done
of beautiful comment. What was the zipper one? There's always one that I need to ask Ian. Like, what was that one?
That was Harbaugh, right?
That was Harbaugh.
Jim?
Yeah. Whichever
or
one.
Or John.
I don't know. The Michigan guy. Jim.
Yeah,
I
was Jim Harbaugh.
Confused. Yeah, Jim.
Okay, and what was he saying? He's saying the zipper. Did, what about a zipper?
Something he said, if my zipper's up, I feel like I'm in style or something like
all
that.
All right, Mr. Khaki, Mr. Khaki. All righty. I'm glad that you threw that little Jared little stuff in there on the hat. By the way, I just sent a text. Well, you got this text, Ian.
Yes, I did.
We have new pictures. Like, so if you check out like our X account, like it's the new pictures we took, the hosts of the shows, at 102.5, 106.3 The Game. And so I took a glance, and then I'm like, is Jared mean mugging? And then I closed in on the picture of Jared. And first of all, just look at this, Jake.
It's, I mean, stoic from Jared Stillman.
No, I mean, I'm showing this to the camera. This is the same thing as the J.J. Watt photo. Like, you're like a 9-year-old who's mad that, like, you didn't get combos in your lunch pail or something, and so you're like mean mug. Grow up.
I love the
grow up.
The contrast of Derek Mason smiling face next to
him. Yeah, Derek's a, you know, an adult who, yeah, okay, we're going to take pictures now. Let's smile. And you were taking promotional pictures. Jared, let me look like this for you. Oh, my God, Jared. I mean, just what you, you just create too much fodder. But this is not what I'm ranting about. And by the way, a lot of reaction to both the Vols, to some of the playoff talk. So we will get to that. But I want to talk about the Tennessee Titans real quick today, because this thing is, you can't just let this go. This is so bizarre. First of all, of course, I have to actually find it. So the Titans put out new media rules this week. And this is one of those things, like when I read it, I'm like, is this one of those things that's like in fine print everywhere, but you just don't even, but no, I don't think so. I mean, this is new for them. So this is a little bit of inside baseball, but anybody who like is in media would see this and it's like, are you kidding me? So this is, quote, don't contact team personnel. Okay, now I don't have it. I have totally botched this because I paraphrase it. Okay, I'm gonna find the exact, this is just perfect for me to totally botch this. Here we go. Quote, all interview requests for Titans executives, coaches, and players should go through the communications department. Members of the Titans organization, including players, should not be contacted directly by media, end quote. That is one of the most laughable things I've ever heard in my life. You cannot possibly cover any sort of team in American sports and go through the PR people or just go to the press conferences and have any chance of like doing anything. Like you, and the idea, I really hope that these guys – I really hope this is just some, yeah, let's put it in as a formality. We'll throw it in, and this is just something we have to say. And I hope it's not Borgonzi, Brinker, any of these guys actually wanting this out there because they don't want reporters to text them. I mean, if you can't handle as a GM, as a coach, certainly. And you know, players, that's some like to do it, some don't. Some will, for sure. If you can't deal with that, if you can't handle that, you don't like that, get the hell out of the NFL. Get the hell out of the NFL. It's a joke. It's a joke. You cannot cover a team without texting and having direct conversations with the people who run the team. It's impossible. And I promise you, Mike Borgonzi, when Adam Schefter texts him or whoever texts him, I promise you he responds. So this is just complete BS. Like I said, I hope it's a formality and it's just something they're doing. If they're actually serious and they're going to try to enforce this, they are the biggest joke in pro sports.
Wow.
That's it. There's the rant. That was quick. When we come back, we'll get back in the Tennessee Titans and things that aren't as dumb as that. Robbie and Rexo, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.